Babylon Project was our last, best hope for peace. A self-contained world 5 miles long, located in neutral territory. A place of commerce and diplomacy for 250,000 humans and aliens. A shining beacon in space, all alone in the night. It was the dawn of the third age of mankind, the year the Great War came upon us all. This is the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2259. The name of the place is Babylon 5.
Hello and welcome to Chats, a television podcast, Season 6, Chatslon 5. My name is Alan, and I'm joined as always by my commentary friend, Magellan.
A little bit of Londo in my life, a little Garibaldi by my side, a little bit of Veer's all I need, a little bit of Lanier's what I see, a little bit of Kosh.
Yeah, keep it up, yeah.
All by right, my I'll side. I'll write the real parody, appreciate it.
Thank you.
It actually works perfectly because Mambo number 5, Babylon 5.
It'll just Babylon number 5.
Babylon number 5. Nobody steal it. Please. I'll really write it.
This is my first parody song. Please don't tease me.
Yeah. Okay, hold on. Let me just get my notebook. And
oh my God, guys. My John has a notebook.
I'm actually getting it.
He's actually getting it. Wow, this is live. This is live to tape.
Yeah. Okay. Let me open up. It's my bullet journal.
Is this the earliest, by the way, is this the earliest chats recording we've ever done?
No way. It's only noon. We've done pre-noon records before.
Not pre-nude. Do you think the listener gets that my running joke now is every time we do one before, like, 8 o'clock, I'm like, is this the earliest one? And you always think it is for a split second. And then you're like, no. Yeah. No, it can't be.
Okay, what was I writing? Yes.
Babylon number 5.
Friday. Task.
Oh, my God.
Write Babylon.
Babylon.
Number 5.
Okay, great.
Okay, cool. So we'll open season 3 with that. Okay.
Fantastic. That I'm gonna hold you to that.
Okay, cool.
This is Chatslon 5, the podcast where Magellan and I watch 2 episodes of Babylon 5 a week, except this week, and sometimes once every season we discuss the previous season of Babylon 5, and we're here to discuss season 2, which is called The Coming of Shadows.
Heck yeah. Ow. I have a sore throat, so when I hit that heck, it really hurt me.
Heck. This is our recap. If you haven't joined us before for a season recap episode, basically, this is designed for new listeners or people who enjoy chats but don't have time to watch the TV show, mm-hmm. which I already recommend you do, but if you can't, that's fine. You can listen to this. We're going to try to recap the season for you semi-seriously so that you have an idea of what's been going on the TV show that we're watching, and you're free to join in and catch up whenever we start a new season. We're also going to sort the episodes of the season into these little buckets that we make for ourselves.
Yeah.
We're doing our usual buckets right now, which are essentials. Those are the episodes that you need to watch. We got the highlights, which are like the good ones. We'll get more into these categories in a bit. Mm-hmm. We got the fine, and we got the lowlights. And we're going to wrap up with some predictions. Again, some serious, some not, for season 3. Point of no return. I was gonna say point of no departure, but that's not correct at all.
Yeah, I'm always interested in these shows that were designed to be watched on TV, and so people were supposed to just pick up at a certain point and start watching. If you were to redesign the episode order, you know, where would you want people to start if you're just making the most streamlined version of a show for binging? And so for us, the highlights are like, well, you have to. Or the essentials are like, well, you have to watch it to understand what's happening. And then the highlights are like, yeah, if you want a good show, watch all these. And then fine and lowlights, it's maybe you should just watch the whole show. It's a thought experiment, thought exercise. And you can also get the digest version of what we thought of season 2 if you're joining our podcast right now and you don't want to catch up.
Sweet. So let's get into our beginning here. We're just going to do an overview of season two. This is sort of the, like, in case you missed it, like Majel said, the digest. So we left season one with Sinclair's fate in peril, in question, and he is mysteriously reassigned to Minbar at the beginning of season two.
See you, bro.
Bye, Sinclair. Bye, Jeff.
Jeff, Michael, Susan.
Never forget that this is a sci-fi show with the main character's name is Susan. Uh-huh. John. And then Jakar. So he's assigned to Minbar. We find out a little bit later that he also, while he's on Minbar, starts a group of warriors called the Rangers, who are sort of like a stealth warrior group that are residing on Babylon 5 in secret, preparing for the upcoming war against the Shadows. I don't remember how much Shadow stuff we got explicitly in season one. We definitely got like name drops and hints of it, but
we saw
we
more
weren't.
Than, I don't know if we learned any more than that.
Any more than that, yeah.
More than that. More than that.
Meanwhile, without a captain, Babylon 5 starts to struggle, and John Sheridan, who is originally a military captain who was at the time assigned to the Agamemnon, another military class ship, is reassigned to Babylon 5 by his superior, General Haig. Mm-hmm. He's initially reluctant and feels like he's not cut out for the job, but he finds friends in all of the humans on the ship and kind of serves as a mediator between the escalating conflicts and the escalating egos of the different ambassadors on Babylon 5. Mm-hmm. Jakar, early on in the season, takes some Narn ships out to the planet Zahadum, and he discovers that the Shadows, an ancient race of mysterious aliens that have been around since the beginning of time, are back and have been resurrected and are preparing for something that we don't fully understand yet. The early middle of the season kind of flounders for a sec as we just get like some one-off-y episodes. And then it really kicks into high gear when Bester comes back. Alfred Bester, which is apparent, it's the name of an author. Did
Alfred
you know that?
Bester?
Yeah. He like wrote books, and then they just named a character after him in the show, which is pretty neat. Bester comes back. He threatens a bunch of people. We start to get the growing and growing suspicion that Psi-Cor is not exactly on the up and up. They're probably controlling the Earth government. This is basically confirmed, and eventually we learn that Sheridan is not just working as the ambassador of Babylon 5, but he's also he has a secret other job. Mm-hmm. Where he has another superior. We're not really given any explicit names of who his superiors are, but it's a rebel group that's seeking to take down the Psi-Corps-controlled Earth government. And so he's sent to Babylon 5 to determine which people on that crew are like trustworthy mm-hmm. and able to join the cause of taking back the Earth government. Mm-hmm. Bester comes back. We are introduced to the whole Talia control plot. Talia Winters, Babylon 5's telepath, is starting to develop a more explicit romance with Susan Ivanova. And then in the same episode, Lita Alexander from Babylon 5 The Gathering, which was the prequel film.
Throwback.
Comes back and says that she's looking for someone named Control, who is a sleeper agent working for Psi-Corps, who's been on the ship the whole time and is probably in the higher-up crew. Eventually, we find out that Talia is Control, and through an activation phrase, she is unlocked and loses the personality of Talia that we know and fully assumes the mantle of Control, a ruthless assassin.
Yep.
She's kicked out of Babylon 5 and not killed, which is probably either important or not important. We still don't really know.
Yep.
But she's gone, and everybody is still kind of rattled by that, but it reasserts that the people that know about this whole conspiracy are really in it together and are good friends that like each other.
Yeah.
We find out in the same episode that Ivanova has been hiding a secret, which is that she, since her mother was a telepath, developed latent psychic powers, and she's able to block psychic interference in her mind. So we have a new telepath on the ship, technically. And then sort of the big tragedy plot of season two starts with the Centauri Emperor dying. The previous Centauri Emperor, dies of old age. And meanwhile, Londo is making these plans with the help of Morden to take the Narn homeworld back.
Oh, no.
This is the turning point where Londo Mollari becomes the most owned man in space. Because his pact with Morden means that he's going to eventually owe Morden something. Morden promises to help him take out the homeworld, which he successfully does after a bunch of back and forth conflict. Him and Jakar's any semblance of a relationship that they had that was at all amicable is gone.
Yep.
Londo begins to isolate himself from everybody ever, including his wives, his son Veer. He's not his son. I can't even make jokes about that because some people don't watch the show and they're gonna be like, "Wait, is he his son?" It's his like son.
You know, it's the way people say son nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah, me and my son.
You know what it means.
Veer starts to feel like he doesn't belong, even though Londo reasserts that he does, in fact, belong, and he's essential to Londo's plans, and he loves Veer deeply as a child. Garibaldi no longer talks to Londo. We're heartbroken by that. Jakar is crestfallen and eventually loses his title of ambassador and is reduced to the rank of citizen Jakar. As the Narn Centauri war comes to a boiling point, eventually the shadows help one last time to take out a weapons depot, and the Narn homeworld is recaptured by the Centauri, and it's colonized, and it seems like that's going to be the end of the Centauri being a problem. And then oops, they still want more territory.
Yep, turns out that they're imperialists. Sorry.
Extreme to the extreme. Sorry.
Yep.
So Londo and Jakar are at each other's throats. Jakar promises him that the Narn will come back someday stronger and better, eventually. And he has more struggles within Narn society, like, you know, confirming his position and keeping control of his people and keeping them motivated. But he gets help from Sheridan and the Rangers to deliver some weapons to the Narn homeworld. So a rebellion is brewing on the Narn homeworld. And then finally, we have like little side plots here and there. We have Dr. Franklin continues to be sad, and he has a bad dad who makes him feel bad about himself. He starts to abuse Stim so that he can keep all these refugees alive.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole season ends with Sheridan jumping out of a train after the defusing or to get away from a bomb exploding. And then as he's about to fall to his death in the middle of Babylon 5, our buddy Ambassador Kosh, who's been slowly training him to fight the shadows, because we learned that the Vorlons, Kosh's race, and the shadows have been at like an eternal since day one kind of war situation.
Mm-hmm.
So he's trying. So Kosh spends a lot of the season trying to train different members of the Army of Light, which is what Delenn calls the sort of rebellion that's set up to fight the shadows. That includes the Rangers and Sheridan and all the humans on the ship. Kosh is trying to train them to be like ready and focused and motivated in the right ways and have the sort of right headspace so that when the battle comes, they're going to be prepared. And to keep his plan going straightforward, he rescues Sheridan by coming out of his encounter suit and projecting a vision of a deity that each race sees as their own race. So they own like the best version of themselves. Londo doesn't see anybody because tragedy. All of the different races see like their god. And then Sheridan sees Hot Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
Hot Ball Jesus. And that is where we end season 2 of Babylon 5.
Ooh, good job, dude. You did.
Thank you. I feel like I still miss some stuff. We still have like the Night Watch, but that's going to come up.
Beautifully comprehensive.
I got the essentials, yeah.
You got the essentials. Okay, so you don't need to watch season 2 because Alan just totally watched it for you and described it to you. But if you're still itching to see, you know, you're like, I got to see Kosh. I got to see what he looked like. You know, I got to see that shiny man expose himself to me. Well, then, let us walk you through the episodes that you should be watching. Should we go great to bad or bad to great?
I kind of like going bad to great.
You want to go bad to great? All right, folks. Yeah. We're going to go bad to great. So let's start with the low lights. These are episodes that we think are pretty much skippable. And funnily enough, it's 4 episodes in a row. So it's pretty easy to go, foop, let's just skip from episode 2 to episode 7. And we'll tell you why each one of these is super skippable. You want to go first?
I do want to go first.
Okay.
My first skippable is season 2, episode 3, The Geometry of Shadows. It's in this episode that Londo hears a prophecy that will affect the galaxy from a wizard.
The Technomages stuff is stupid.
Technomages is cool, amazing in theory. Just perfect character.
No, not amazing in theory. We had such a big argument about this yesterday when we were putting this list together. Alan is convinced that Technomages are a good idea. And I don't think so.
Can you just email me in and tell me I'm right? Just don't even like give me your opinion. Just tell me I'm right. Yeah. No, I get it. I think they're silly. Maybe we'll see them. I think we're going to see them again in Crusade, probably. Mm-hmm. But for now, we just get a taste of Technomages being like, Londo, you're like screwed, bud. Mm-hmm. And he's like, really? And they're like, yeah. And it doesn't help us in any way. And then the B plot is this really, really misguided plot line where Vonova is helping out this the Drazi, which are a non-aligned race on Babylon 5, deal with their conflict where they wear different colors and they fight people who would dress differently.
Mm, yep. Yep. Ooh, that was a dumb one.
Are we going to address any of that? Are we going to, like, tackle the themes and how that relates to the real world? No, dude. Absolutely not. It's a skippo.
It's a skippo. The next episode is also a skippo. That's season 2, episode 4, A Distant Star. It's just not... There isn't much that interesting that happens in A Distant Star. It's not horrible. The main plot is that Sheridan is visited by an old buddy of his,
Maynard.
Guy, yeah, Maynard, captain of the Cortez. Mm-hmm. And the point is he's, I guess, trying to refine Sheridan's character for us of like, oh, you were an explorer and now you're stuck here on this ship. But we don't really know Sheridan that well yet. We don't really care about him. And then a lot of this plot also is like Warren Keffer focused and is like it's the episode where Warren Keffer rises to prominence as the leader of Zeta Wing or whatever.
Yes.
So it's the only good part of this episode is the jokes about Dr. Franklin putting people on diets and then him eating the Banya Cauda with Garibaldi at the end.
It's almost worth it alone just for that.
Except it's not.
Except it isn't.
It's just skippable.
That brings us to our next episode. You might notice a trend at this point, but the next one is episode 5, The Long Dark. It is in this one that an ancient Earth sleeper ship arrives on the station, carrying it with it a dead body and a woman who was frozen like 100 years ago. And also a soldier of darkness? This is a really freaking messy episode. It's another one. Yeah. I think the worst episodes of Babylon 5 that we've noticed so far are the ones where, like, something cool in theory is happening. Like, person is being unfrozen after years of cryosleep, and it's like, what is the world like now? That's awesome. It's okay where, you know, Jakar is like, things are not as they used to be, and Franklin is like, yeah, well, you thought we'd be better, but we never stopped fighting, and like, that's cool. But then also it concerns itself with this Soldier of Darkness plot, and it's like, is she lying to us about stuff? And Franklin is flirting with her, and it does really bad things for Franklin's character. Like, it's not a good episode, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like the worst episodes of Babylon 5 are the ones that are driven by some gimmick or some concept rather than by the characters themselves.
Yes.
Which is true also of our next and our final low light, which is season 2, episode 6, A Spider in the Web. And that's the one where we have a cyber zombie created by Psycor or something, programmed to stop this deal from happening that would slowly allow Mars to be a separate entity.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, this guy who was a Free Mars fighter dude has been reprogrammed, and he's Abelhorn, and he's here to kill Talia Winters for some reason. Except now that doesn't really make sense, given that she's control. Why would Psycor? I don't know. Hmm.
Yeah, why would Sekhor send somebody after? Maybe it's a long play and he wasn't actually going to kill her.
Yeah, I don't remember enough about the episode to care, and I don't think it really matters.
Nope.
The only thing that's redeemable about this episode is that it's the first appearance of Zach Allen. no, I don't know. I don't think so.
Is it? It is. I think you're right.
It is, but I don't think that redeems it.
Alas.
His place of birth is Chicago Earth.
I believe it. Jeff Conaway might be from Chicago also. They might just pull where the actor is from. There's nothing memorable about this episode except that Jessica Walters is also in it. Walter?
Is in for a moment. Yeah.
Yeah, like a blink and you'll miss it cameo of like telling Sheridan, hey, follow the rules. And he's like, no. And then that's it.
Our next bucket is fine. And to be honest, here's the thing with season two that I found as we were sorting these things. Sometimes in some shows, when you talk about like lowlights and highlights and the fine category, it's pretty easy to delineate between them. And sometimes it's those delineations are more subtle. Mm-hmm. And I think this season, that's definitely true. The kind of the spread, I don't know what that statistical term is, but like how far the data is spread in terms of quality is a lot more narrow than it is in other shows or in season one even. And so there were some lowlights in the season that are kind of leaning towards fine, and also some highlights that are kind of leaning towards fine. So just for context there. We'll talk about fine. Fine episodes are like, you watch them, you know, if you put them on in the background and do your thing. You want to go first?
Sure. My first fine episode is episode 8, A Race Through Dark Places, which might seem like a controversial pick because, you know, we just mentioned Bester coming back being a big deal. But in the episode where he actually comes back, all that happens is we get this really silly plot about this underground railroad of rogue telepaths that kidnap Talia Winters. And all they're doing is confirming that Psycorp is bad.
Right.
And it's like, I knew that. And Bester is a little bit menacing. He doesn't really get a lot to do. I really wish they would just use Bester more. Because he's just he's kind of nice in this episode, if I remember. And he's not like scary the way I kind of expect him to be. They don't do much with what they have. And then this is also the beginning of a plot line that I don't love yet, which is the newly half-human Delenn going on a date with John Sheridan.
Oh, that was nice, though. They went to the dinner?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's why I put that in fine, is like, I don't hate that, but I want to love it, and I don't love it yet.
Yeah.
At least at this point in the season.
My first fine is the episode just before. So this whole chunk from like 2 to 8 is pretty mediocre, probably the weakest part of the season. Episode 7, Soulmates. And I want to speak about the B plot first because it connects to what you're just saying. The B plot is where Talia Winters' ex-husband comes on the ship.
Oh, God.
Matthew Stoner, remember?
Oh, God.
And
yes,
he's
I remember
like, myself. I'm the one who escaped Psycor, and I could get you to escape Psycor. I'm kind of a creepy guy, and I know what you want, Garibaldi, whatever. It's cheesy. The thing that I'm realizing about season two is as we were watching it, it felt like the Psycor stuff was like the season arc and it was going to get resolved in some way. Because there was all this setup of Psycor's doing evil stuff. They've got the cyber zombie, this underground railroad of people trying to escape. Talia Winters is questioning, do I still want to be part of Psycor or not? And I thought that that would go somewhere. And then they kind of just ejected that storyline out the airlock when Control took over Talia Winters' consciousness. And it didn't feel like it resolved or went anywhere. So in retrospect, all of these episodes where major plots hinge on Psycor are kind of, you know, you can kind of dismiss them.
Exactly. Like, if the Psycor stuff had come to more of some sort of head this season, then I could feel like, you know, all of this was building towards a specific conclusion. But because we haven't gotten it yet, it really just boils down to Sikor is bad, Talia's control.
Right.
That control the Earth government, and we're going to fight back against them in some way. But, like, it's kind
of
hard.
And that's where we were at the end of season one. Like, from beginning of season two to end of season two, our understanding of Sikor is not substantially changed.
It's given a little bit of depth, but not much.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, the real season arc of the Narn-Centauri War fundamentally changes the fabric of the show.
Right. It evolves. It starts in one place. It ends completely differently. And there's surprises and twists along the way and development and, you know, good moments.
Yeah. So the B plot of Soulmates is about Talia Winters and her ex-husband. And it's like, okay, nah, nothing. And then the A plot is, you know, perfect. Just kidding. It's Londo and he's trying to divorce all of his wives. <It's> kind of stupid. And Londo looks like a skeevy dude, but there's something fun about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think partly because it's in the middle of this season where Londo is just a villain and he's becoming more and more corrupted by his evil deeds.
Right.
And it's just nice to see an episode where he's just goofy, wishes he was in love, old man.
Yeah, we're never going to get an episode like season one where him and Lanier go gambling ever again. Unfortunately.
No, that's so sad.
Gutted. Just gutted. Oh. We couldn't appreciate it enough while we had it until we knew that we'd never get it again.
Yeah.
Wow. Speaking of Londo, I want to talk about my next fine episode.
Yep.
Which is episode 12, Acts of Sacrifice.
Okay.
This is honestly a pretty messy episode, but it is bolstered by the moving forward with the Narn-Centauri war conflict. This is an episode where Londo also changes outfits. It's like where he gets the new, like, darker color suit.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's, like, a heel now. And that stuff is all fun and good. And you have Jakar being stressed out. You have all this stuff. But then, like, the only lasting memory that I have of it is this B-plot where the Lumadi come to Babylon 5. And there's this, like, quiet emperor and his interpreter. And Ivanova is, as the newly appointed commander of the ship, expected to, like, deal with them. And so she walks them through the down below, and they make a weirdly poignant, like, appropriate comment that, like, isn't it kind of messed up that Babylon 5 keeps all of the, like, lower class people in one place so that they don't breed with with everyone else? And it's like, wow, that's pretty smart. And then, oops, also, this guy really wants to have sex with Ivanova.
Whoopsie.
And then, oops, I mean, less oops, they settle this by having her show him quote-unquote sex, which is her dancing around him and yelling really loud, which is funny. So, like, despite how dumb this plot line is, it ends in a really silly way, and I don't hate it. I can't hate it.
Yeah.
But it's, again, it's only memorable for how silly it is, not for, like, what it's adding much to the Narn-Centauri stuff.
Mm-hmm. My next find is the episode just before. So our finds are actually, we have this chunk from episode 11 to episode 14. So this is another kind of dip in the season. But my next find is episode 11, All Alone in the Night. And the two main threads of this one is in the A plot, Sheridan is kidnapped by some alien species that's messing with him or experimenting on him or something. And he has, like, a dream while he's there. And the dream matters and is called back to a few times.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, there's not much going on there. The other important plot is Delenn meets with the Grey Council and they kick her out of the Grey Council. That part's pretty cool. And explores the ramifications of Delenn having turned into a half Mimbari, half-human person. But, you know, it's surrounded by just totally forgettable stuff that makes the episode as a whole not that interesting. And you can kind of just watch the Great Council scene and you don't need to watch any of the rest of the episode.
Exactly. Even, like, in the writing out the plot of a season, like, Delenn gets kicked off the Great Council is one sentence, but the performances and the lighting and, like, the framing of all of that stuff is really great. And then her crying, like, walking out and crying is, like, good stuff.
Yeah.
It's another one of those classic, like, this episode has good things, but ultimately is, like, borderline okay, you know?
Yeah.
My final episode is continuing this trend. Episode 13, Hunter Prey. We got a fugitive doctor, which is already like an okay plot.
Yeah.
We got Captain Sheridan trying to figure out what's going on. And then we get Garibaldi and Franklin doing this like kind of okay buddy cop thing where they're dressed in civilian clothes and like interrogating people and finding out where the doctor is. It's really fine. It's like quintessentially fine.
Yeah.
Like it's not that offensive. I remember having problems with it when we watched it of being like, you know, the more they lean into like this cop fantasy that the show does every once in a while of like they're cool cops and they get to like dress in normal clothes and like it's fine that they get to like point weapons at the guys and like threaten to use deadly force. Like that's fun. I don't love that stuff and I still don't, but it's like I enjoy the performances a lot and it's kind of charming, but it's another one where it's like, do we learn anything from this?
Right.
Because this guy in the universe is important. This guy being like, I have important information about the Sokor conspiracy. But it's like, we already know. We know.
Yeah, we know they're bad. Give us something else.
Derek Cranston carries this episode, damn it. His name is Derek. I didn't know his name was Derek Cranston. I thought it was just Cranston. That's hilarious. But, yeah. Do you have anything about Hunter Prey? Like, it's not...
No, not really. It's just, it is what it is. Speaking of that cop fantasy thing, though, our last find is episode 14, There All the Honor Lies, which is the one where Sheridan is accused of murdering a Minbari citizen who he did murder. Like, he did shoot this person in cold blood. And the episode is spent with essentially Sheridan being enraged that he's being accused of murdering someone that he murdered, and then him pulling strings to get Delenn and Lanier to turn against their own people to exonerate him, even though he murdered someone that he did murder. So that's, you know, not a great episode.
It's one of those ones where if I didn't have, like, maybe watching this when I'm younger, I'd just be like, oh, it's fine. Like, it's the, like, the legal, like, the, what is the, what does a murder even mean? Like, what is the question of, like, is this kill justified if it was self-defense and all this stuff? And it's a kind of an okay idea, but it's handled very badly. And then the final scene where everyone, like, walks out and they're like, gotcha, we recorded you. Yeah, you're caught.
The Scooby-Doo ending.
Yeah. Totally, totally. No good.
And, like, the show does not do a good job wrestling with the fact that Sheridan murdered, like, a whole ship worth of Minbari, you know?
Right, yeah.
Like, that's pretty haunting. And the fact, we didn't talk about this, but the fact that in the last episode of the season, Ivanova's like, I got you something. It's a scrap of metal from that ship you blew up when you killed all those people. And he's like, whoa, how'd you get
this?
It's
thanks.
So thoughtful. It's awful.
What the hell?
Oh my god, it's the worst. And then the B plot of this episode is the one where Babylon 5 has a gift shop. Yeah. Just dumb. It does end with probably the best written scene ever in all of Babylon 5 so far, I'd say, which is Warren Keffer's out in space and he's like, "Oh, unidentified object, what could it be?" And then it's the teddy bear.
Oh, shut up. Out of here. Bye-bye.
That's actually, I think, probably the best.
It's more the best because JMS was like, don't send me cute stuff or this happens. I'll write you into the episode.
And yeah, the real life context of it is pretty entertaining.
Yeah, yeah.
It just makes no sense in an episode. That's the finds. I mean, now let's get into the good stuff. If you've been doing your dishes, you better stop. Put those dishes down. You can clean... Derek, you can clean your gravy boat later.
Can we before we dip into the highlights, just like quickly read this email from our buddy Dan?
Yeah, please.
We got one email this week, and we're not going to do a break like we usually do.
No, we're not going to do a break. We're going to charge right through.
This one's coming in hot. This one's a couple hours old.
Ooh.
I'm just going to read it. This is from our buddy Dan. This is about Comes the Inquisitor and the Fall of Night.
Great.
Thank you, Dan. Here we go.
Thanks, Dan.
I still don't know how I feel about the Inquisitor being Jack the Ripper. I get why the choice was made, and it was made for a good enough reason, but I've never been totally sold on it. I think that my reservations are similar to the ones you guys expressed. The character has been used in other genre fiction, and the saving grace is that it's used reasonably effectively here. The performance was solid, and it helps show that the Vorlons are morally gray. Yes. And in The Fall of Night, Mr. Wells was played by John Vickery, who also plays the Minbari military commander, Narun. Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool. I love those little, like, those people playing different people things. I think Alan's right concluding that we still haven't seen a proper Vorlon. Yes, I love it when I'm right. What we do see, I think, is very telling about them and their relations to the younger races. But it certainly answers the question of why they would be recognized by everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's not precisely true considering what Londo saw, or rather what he didn't see. And Dan brings up a good question here. This has always troubled me. Does he see Sheridan lightly touch down on his own accord? Now, this may sound oxymoronic, but I've always wanted Londo to better describe the nothing that he didn't see.
Hmm.
I also have wondered what it was, wondered if it was strictly Londo who saw nothing because of his dealings with the shadows, or if all Centauri saw nothing, which would indicate that the Vorlons didn't interact with them in the same way they did with other races.
Hmm.
I think there are things that should be answered by lore, and there are things that are answered by the feeling you get when they are said. And Londo saying, "I saw nothing," is enough of an answer to me. Like,
yeah,
I don't need to know what that means.
I think the point is you can read into it whatever your interpretation is. There's enough there that you can construct your own understanding. So I think my personal canon is that Londo himself, because he was corrupted by association with the shadows, can't see the Vorlons anymore.
Yeah, and he probably just saw it, like, he just saw Sheridan falling and then got caught by air. Leave it to Warren Keffer to die in a dumb way that puts the whole galaxy at risk. The only advantage the Army of Light has held on to is the fact that they've been playing dumb about shadows. It seems fair to conclude that Keffer blew their one advantage. As always, I look forward to hearing your overall impressions of the season.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
So let's zoom right back into it with our highlights.
One night.
We're going to get copyrights stricken.
Yeah. Bring it on, Kanye.
Fight me, Kanye.
That dude
Fight
can afford
me.
To have Kenny G in his living room, so maybe we should be careful.
It's true. So highlights. These are the episodes that, despite not being essential, are good episodes of television and have good moments, good plot lines, good A and B plots. These are like, you should watch these.
Yeah, you should watch these.
If you have a little bit of extra time and you're not just trying to watch the, like, barrel forward through the plot episodes, you can watch the highlights. Shall I go first, Magellan?
Go for it.
We're going to start with an introductory episode, Points of Departure, Season 2, Episode 1. This is a big one. It feels like a really dense episode where you're introduced both to Sheridan, the Agamemnon. We get more Londo stuff. We get hinting of the war coming up. We see what all the characters are up to. I always love the, like, this. Like, there's a scene in this one where Ivanova is like, hey, so here's what's been going on in the last 6 months. Sinclair, gone. Garibaldi, sad. He's still alive, though, which was... something I was actually really worried about. Not that he wouldn't be alive, but that he'd be, like, damaged in a serious way.
Mm-hmm.
And just, like, catching us up on what's been going on and then, like, laying the building blocks for everything else. I think it's great also that Delenn doesn't come out of the chrysalis this episode. She comes out at the end, and then it's in episode 2 that we actually see her, because you just spend this one being like, yo, but what about Delenn, though? Like, where's my girl?
Yeah.
And that was the last time that Delenn was as cool and mysterious as she was in season 1.
Oh, wow.
Womp. She's cool in a different way. She's not mysterious anymore.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess she's not mysterious.
It's different.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
But yeah, I think Points of Departure is an interesting episode to examine of, like, season premieres and how you reset the table.
Yeah. I think season premieres always kind of get an inflated rating from us because, you know, if you're watching through the season, you kind of want to know what's going on. And
yeah.
I think Revelations which is our next highlight, episode two, for the same reason, is a highlight partly because of just what's communicated in it. It's the episode that puts everybody in the position that they are in for season two going forward.
Mm-hmm,
so Delenn comes out of her chrysalis and Sheridan says, "Whoa, hachi machi, now that's a hot lady." That's a word for word quote from the Babylon 5 wiki. Garibaldi's out of his coma. He spaces the dude who betrayed him. Jakar uncovers the shadows and he says, you guys, there's a whole thing going on. And everyone says, bro, chill out. It's fine. And, you know, this is the moment where Londo makes his bad move to be a bad man.
Londo's no good, horrible, very bad decision.
Yeah, exactly. So in that way, this episode's important because it puts all the pieces on the table. I think this is also the one where Sheridan promotes Ivanova to commander of Babylon 5. Is that true? Or maybe the first one? I'm not sure.
Oh, I'm pretty sure they at least like hang out before.
Yeah, they hang.
He promotes her.
Anyway,
she's listed as commander in this one, but I might be wrong. Either way, that's all happening in this vicinity.
Yeah. So for that reason, this episode matters and you should watch it, but it's not the most exhilarating episode in the world. Yeah.
And Delenn cracks out of her chrysalis.
Yeah, I said that. Remember?
Oh, sorry, you did.
It's like, oh, hachi machi. Now that's one. Oh, that whole lady thing.
Oh, that word for word quote. I forgot.
I'll quote it one more time. Oh, hachi machi. That's one hot lady.
Boy. boy, she says to him. She goes, boy.
Yeah. Good show.
Great show. Great program. Our next episode that we consider a highlight is episode 15, and now for a word. Continuing the trend of each season having a, like, news reporter comes to Babylon 5, and now for a word, while not seeming initially like an important episode, actually is, like, huge.
Hugely important, yeah.
Yeah, we like see the first active conflict between the Narn and the Centauri. Sheridan is placed in the middle and forced to pick a side. And this is all framed brilliantly through a like Earth-sponsored news report where this lady, didn't she have like a cool name? Cynthia Torkman.
Yeah, yeah.
As a reporter that's spending X number of hours on Babylon 5, like learning about people, asking them what they want, and getting their opinion, and they're kind of like filtering a usual Babylon 5 plot through like, oh shit, there are cameras on, we have to be nice. And the stress that comes from that is just delicious. I can just eat it for lunch. It's a very tense episode and a very cool way to like mess with the dynamics of every character
in the format of the show. Yeah.
Yeah. I hope we get one of these every season. I hope this is a regular thing. I have a suspicion that it is.
Yeah. Our next highlight is, I think this is kind of it's a debatable highlight, honestly.
Okay.
This is episode 10, Gropos.
Gropos.
Gropos. This is the one where we learn that Dr. Franklin's dad is like a famous general and he has 25,000 Marines who are going to go fight, like a small planet somewhere. Mm-hmm. And they all have to hang out on Babylon 5 before they deploy. So it's a throwaway side episode. It's not really important at all to the main plot, but I just remember really enjoying the conversation that we had about this one. And it gave us angles on the characters that we haven't actually seen before. So seeing where Dr. Franklin gets his sort of like clear-eyed, single-focused vision of like, this is what I have to do to help people.
Right.
But also seeing how that clashes with his father's version of the same thing, I think is actually a really compelling way to explore his character. Seeing the Marines be racist to Delenn and try to attack her was more... That impacted me more, honestly, than the Grey Council shunning her and kicking her out. And then Garibaldi's plot with... what's her name? With Dodger.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's this episode.
Where they like almost have sex, but then he starts talking about his complex love life. She gets mad at him and then she dies.
As one does.
Yeah, that I don't know. That felt really real. And I actually didn't hate Warren Kiefer in this episode. Probably the only time. Because he's hanging out with these dudes that, that sort of slap him around and they like
him.
Oh, yeah.
The tough guys.
Yeah. So, I don't know. As far as throwaway episodes go, I thought we actually got to see the... It felt character-driven and we got to see people in ways that we don't normally see them. Also not written by JMS.
Right. The rare one from this season.
Lawrence G. DiTillo.
DiTillo. Larry.
He wrote 7 episodes of the series, more than anyone other than J. Michael Straczynski.
That's some good stuff. I always forget that there is more to Gropos other than just the dad stuff. Like it's
there's fun little plots.
It's silly, but again, like it debatable if it's a highlight, but it was such an interesting discussion for us. And I had a good time. And sometimes we can rank things based on what we liked about them, because that's what this ranking is.
I think I like Lawrence G. DiTillo because he also wrote Born to the Purple, which is the one where Londo falls in love with Ladira. Is that her name?
He also wrote, yes, Adira.
Adira.
He actually also wrote my next highlight, coincidentally, which is episode 17, Knives.
Yeah.
So we have 2 plots, as we usually do. In 1, John S. Sheridan. What is John Sheridan's middle name? I need to know right the heck now. He doesn't have a middle name.
What? He doesn't have one?
Not that I'm seeing. His dad's name is David, though.
John. I think it's Michael. J. Michael Sheridan.
That's going to be canon now. Thanks.
Is that why Jeffrey Sinclair and John Sheridan both have the initials JS? Because of...
Yeah, it is.
JMS.
It is.
The
it
wiki
is
lists that his full name is John J. Sheridan. So his middle name starts with a J.
It's John Sheridan.
John.
John Jones Sheridan.
John Sheridan.
Knives has John Sheridan understanding that he's become host to an alien life form who really just wants to go home. Let him sleep. Give him a nap. No, this plot line like completely sucks. It like drains the energy out of this episode, but then it is elevated right back up into highlight territory by one of my favorite Londo episodes and one of my favorite Londo plots, where him and his friend, whose name is Urza Jado, meet again after years. It starts with Urza like threatening to kill him jokingly, and that's not fun. But then it's like, what have you been up to? What's the war up to? Oh, people actually like me. And we learn about Centauri Prime. We learn about Londo and his past. We learn about how he treats other Centauri besides Veer. And then it all pops like a bubble when Urza's like, hey, I'm being like targeted. My family's being targeted. Can you help? And he's like, yeah, I have power. I have real power and I'm not a puppet. I can help you. Uh-huh. And he asks Loritha for help. And Rifa's like, nah, dude, I'm the one who put the hit on that guy, so screw you. And then Urza gets mad at him for working with Rifa. He challenges him to a duel, and Londo is forced to kill his best friend.
Whoa.
Yeah, whoa. It's super dark. I'll never forget the face that Londo makes when he looks up and realizes that he has the shot, and he kills Urza. That's a heartbreaker right there. I know it's a kind of... easy for us to be like, oh, the Londo episodes are good, but that's not our fault. It's not my fault that Londo's the best, one of the best characters on the show, second only to David Corwin. But anyways, I love Londo.
To who?
Don't worry about it. Okay. David Corwin?
I don't know who that is.
You will. Okay. You will. Oh, okay. You will.
Awesome.
That's my last highlight. What's your last?
Great. My last highlight is the next episode, episode 18, Confessions and Lamentations. And you'd think that I would remember what it's about. Oh, I remember. There's this another debatable pick, to be honest. This is what I was saying, that there's a razor's edge this season between highlights and finds and lowlights and finds. This is the one where there's a disease that is killing a bunch of people on Babylon 5, or of this specific race anyway. And the only reason it's a highlight for me is because of the scene where Delenn's about to go help them, and she talks to Sheridan, and she's like, baby, I'm leaving. And he's like, call me John. And they almost kiss. And I liked it a lot.
All life is transitory, a dream. We all come together in the same place in the end of time. If I don't see you again here, I will see you in a little while in the place where no shadows fall. Delenn, when I do see you again, call me John. Kissy, 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 kissy.
And then
kissy,
she bites
kissy,
her lip and throws her arms up and runs away.
Like a Muppet.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. The rest of this is actually kind of forgettable, to be honest. So, you know, if people want to fight me and do it, then,
there's a whole genocide.
What do you mean?
A whole genocide happens in this episode.
Okay, don't paint me to be a bad guy just because they invented an alien species in this episode to kill all of them.
You're right. You're right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, those are the highlights. You want to talk about the essentials, the episodes you just need to watch?
No.
Okay. I mean, people can figure out process of elimination, what's left. Go watch those. We don't need to talk about them.
No, wait. Can I talk about at least three of them?
Yeah. And I'll, you want me to talk about the other three?
Yes. Okay, cool. Definitely.
Let's try that out. See if it works.
First up is episode 16, In the Shadow of Zahadum. I'm like obsessed with the way that you say Zahadum. It's so good. Can you give me
Zahadum?
Yes. Oh, goopy. This is a big Morden. This is the Morden episode. This is the, like, we interrogated Morden. You can't, like, Morden is so important to the blood of the show. He's, and literally, like the bloodshed of this show happens because of a Mr. Morden primarily. He comes onto the ship.
Whenever you
we
say
actually,
Mr.
like,
Morden, it reminds me of that Schoolhouse Rock song about, I gotta find it. Hold on.
Okay.
Mr. Morden. There's a song called Mr. Morden, which is all about, it's from the Grammar episode. And it's about the subject and predicate of a sentence. Have you seen this song?
No, I've seen a lot of Squash Rock, but not this one.
Okay. Here, everybody at home, join us, won't you? We're going to watch the Schoolhouse Rock Grammar song, The Tale of Mr. Morden. Alan, I'm going to send you a link to it. It's only 3 minutes long. We're just taking a quick stop down. I mean, this is why people love our show, you know.
This is it. This is the reason that they pay us money sometimes.
Okay, here, take a look at this. So get ready. Pull this up on your computer, if you could. And we'll watch this together.
All right, count us down, kid.
And then every time you see Morden, I want you to think of this guy.
Okay.
All right. We're going to hit play on Schoolhouse Rock Grammar, The Tale of Mr. Morden, in 3, 2, 1, play.
Okay. He's cute.
Yeah, you've seen this one or no?
No.
Okay. So he's just like a sad man who's living a normal, sad life.
And this is going to turn into a subject predicate lesson?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's got a little cat.
Basically Garfield.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's also about him being super lonely, by the way. Subject of the sentence. And what the predicate says, he does. Schoolhouse Rock's good, dude.
It is.
Oh, he's an incel. Whoops, forgot about this.
Oh my
god.
Oh,
he's part of the problem. Oh no. Hey. She's
hey, how waving. You doing?
He's gonna blush.
Wait, he's like presenting his butt to us.
I know. Yeah.
Oh, that's relatable.
Yeah.
Oh, he's got shorts. They're like shorts.
He's jogging. He's trying to lose weight.
Oh, good for him.
Oh, he wrote a poem. That's nice.
Oh, he's going to shoot a tour in a paper airplane? That's not creepy.
Nope. Well, I like that this song just establishes that she likes him too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not as bad as it could be. He fainted. Wow, they're wasting a lot of electricity.
I like the little tiny moon.
Oh, that's cute. Oh, poor Mr. Morton.
Honey.
Oh, this is actually sad. Poor Morton. This is why he joined the Shadows, dude. Roses are red, but Morton is blue. Boo-hoo-hoo.
Ah.
She's in his house. Whoa!
Whoa, progressive. Schoolhouse Rock.
Yeah, just a nice graduate reference.
Yeah, what?
You know how well the love in the Graduate ends.
It separates the graduate. So that's what in the Shadow of Zahadum is about.
Yeah,
is
it's
Mr.
actually
Morton.
Just about that. Who knew that so much of my romantic life was shaped by the Schoolhouse Rock grammar special?
Wow.
Who knew?
Whomst could have guessed.
Thank you for indulging me in that. Okay, so Mr. Morton, what's he doing?
No, there really isn't much to say. I mean, this is the Morton episode. Yeah. He's interrogated. We have the worry of like, oh, we don't want the Shadows to know. And then also we get the episode where Delenn and Kosh drop the whole like first ones.
Oh yeah, yeah. Here's the lore of the whole show. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's great.
Yeah, you got to watch it to understand what the heck's going on. My first essential, really a lot of these essentials are going to focus on the skeleton of the Narn Centauri War, because that's the most important thread of season two. So mine is The Coming of Shadows, which is episode 9. And The Coming of Shadows is the episode, we talked about this in the summary of the season, where the Emperor comes to visit Babylon 5 and he's like, okay, things are going to be chill between the Centauri and the Narn, and I'm going to say that. But in the background, you've got Lord Rifa and you've got Londo and you've got Jakar, and everybody's trying to kill the Emperor until he dies himself. And
oopso.
Not before he talks to Jakar and he says, bruh. Or no, he talks to Franklin and Franklin tells Jakar, bruh, yes. we should be cool. And you get to see Jakar's just get snapped in half because he trusts Londo and he trusts the Centauri, and then he's betrayed. And they go to war with his people.
It's maybe one of the saddest scenes in the series so far.
Yeah, for sure. Really good episode, though. Super tense, and just like, this was the episode where, I mean, you know, you heard us before talking about how episodes 3 through 6 were stinkers, and then 7 and 8 were fine. And then episode 9 comes along and it's like, oh, fuck. Yes.
Yeah, this is
the show that we're watching. It's like you're doused with a bucket of water and just fully awake.
I'm actually, it's you looking at the numbers here, like the season does progressively get better.
Yes.
And then by the end, it's just constantly firing on all cylinders. And I hope to God that season 3 just starts there and goes higher.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a common trait with shows like this that are more, narrative. I mean,
yeah,
I feel like that was our impression of almost every season of Buffy back when we watched Buffy, was like the first 8 episodes are kind of garbage of any season, and then somewhere along the way they pick up steam.
Right.
And I think that was probably, I don't remember Farscape seasons in that same way, but that was probably true of Farscape too.
There's a lot of, in Farscape, like meandering around for the middle of the season and then building up to something. And then the last like 5 or 6 episodes are just like cylinder, yeah, firing on them. And can't just say cylinder and not say firing on. Partway through that, I was like, what? I don't know what I'm saying. I'd like to talk about my next essential episode of the season. It's episode 19, Divided Loyalties.
Oh, yeah.
We were fortunate enough to be joined by guest host Olivia for this episode. And she brought a fantastic discussion of the relationship between Talia and Ivanova, and the metaphors that within. And this is also the episode where Talia is revealed to be control. The PsyCorp stuff comes to a head. We learn about Ivanova's latent telepath powers. We get some really sad scenes. It's kind of an Ivanova acting showcase, or a Claudia Christian acting showcase. And everyone's kind of doing their thing here. Some good comedy, you know, with Sheridan talking to his whole staff for like 1 second each, and then as Lita is like interrogating them. It's cool to see Lita back. I have a feeling she's going to be coming back again. She seems too important, considering her connection to the Vorlons, to not come back.
Yeah.
But she's surprisingly good and has like decent chemistry with the cast. And honestly, for the show to continue, they had to address something about Talia at some point. She just didn't feel like she 100% gelled with the show.
Yeah.
And so for them to kind of like backfill that and say, oh, it's because she's not the person we know as Talia is dead. That's something. There's something interesting about that.
Yeah.
But it also calls into question like all these Talia like having problems with Kosh plot lines or Talia being like chased by Psycor. It's like, what was that? What were they doing?
Right. It's the thing that's frustrating to me about what happened to Talia is that the show seems so attentive to making sure that everything pays off. And this is the only thing where I'm like, all of that Psycor stuff, the Talia stuff, is that ever going to matter? Or did that get thrown out the window along with Talia as a character?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. My first highlight, or my second highlight rather, is the next episode. And so we're pretty much talking about the last four episodes of the season now. And it's The Long Twilight Struggle, which is the episode that ends the Narn Centauri conflict. And it has a couple scenes that are really among the best moments in season two and potentially among the best in the show, depending on where we go from here. Londo staring at the destruction of the Narn homeworld. The scene in the council meeting where Londo's making his demands of the captured Narn, and then Jakar gives his defiant speech at the end and walks out the room. Really, really like legendary stuff. Overall, this is again an episode that just holds on to you from beginning to end and guts you and changes what the show's all about. And I'll just go ahead and do my third essential.
We can do the next episode.
Episode 21, which is the one where Jack the Ripper interrogates Delenn to see if she's cool or not. Great performance on Jack the Ripper's part. Kind of stupid that he's Jack the Ripper, but whatever.
Great flex, but okay.
Delenn is also turning in a wonderful performance. I think it's good to understand more about the Vorlons and their approach and what they're about, more than anything else.
Learning what the Vorlons want and like establishing the moral grayness of them is important.
Yeah.
And even though it's a pretty silly, it feels like a one-off episode, I think we're setting up a lot of themes that are going to matter a lot soon. And emphasis on soon, not even like are going to matter in season five, but like I hope this Vorlon stuff comes back like in season three.
Yeah, like right now.
Complete, like immediately. Speaking of Vorlon stuff, my final essential episode, it's an easy one. It's The Fall of Night, episode 22, the season finale. Mm. We just talked about this last week. This episode shreds. A lot of it is kind of like iffy with like the Narn warship and the Centauri, and it's like, which
it's a slow
like,
build. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really takes its time getting to the stuff that you want. By the time everyone is like screaming at each other and begging each other not to murder people, and then they blow up a bunch of Centauri ships and Londo feels like they've declared war on him, and you know, all of this stuff is building to a head, and then you know it's you're already on edge, and then Sheridan jumps out of a hover train, and is caught by Hot Jesus Kosh himself. You're like, yeah, you know what, this isn't even that weird because I'm already in it. Like it feels weird when you describe that ending scene in isolation, but it's like this episode's already bazonkers, and then that happens. And another like side plot thing that may or may not become a bigger deal soon is the whole Night Watch thing and Zach Allen's role within as like the new narc that may like cause some trouble for the Army of Light crew. I think that might be our new term for like the good guys. Like they're like the Scoobies of Babylon 5 is the Army of Light.
Yeah, that sounds good.
But we might come up with a cuter nickname at some point.
Yeah.
And that's it. That is all of season 2 of Babylon 5.
Nice. Well, what do you think? What do you think is going to happen next in season three?
I have some predictions.
Oh yeah, me too. Let's share.
Sweet.
Let's share.
I usually try to go for like the short and sweet, but like very realistic predictions so that I can be right but not be wrong, because that's what I like.
Yeah, you're sort of like a horoscope.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like Londo does bad things. No, I actually think that Londo in season three is gonna finally realize the error of his ways and start to try to fight the shadows.
Yeah, I hope so.
I want it in my heart. I hope he makes up to Jakar, or at least tries to and then fails. That's more likely what's gonna happen. Is like, Jakar, take me back, baby. I already still have my stuff in here. I don't want to move out of your apartment yet. Come on, baby. And then Jakar is like, no. And then like kicks him out of a window. And the rest of the season is Londo recovering from this window fall. Obviously, the Franklin drug addiction stuff is going to take a turn for the worse.
Oh, yep.
And I can like see a really awkward scene of him in the down below in like a hood, like buying drugs from a shitty alien.
Yep.
I can just visualize it with my mind's eye.
Super clear.
In terms of bigger plot stuff, Sheridan, hopefully, at the rate that he has been picking up on conspiracies, should realize that even his bosses, the rebels, are a little bit sketchy, and probably evil in some way, or are not on the up and up, and that he decides to work for the Army of Light entirely instead of this like uncovering a conspiracy plot. And then finally, I just really want to see Zahadoom like on the planet, because I love their planet set so far. Even though there's not a lot of them and they're really silly, it's time to fight back. It's time to like I want to see a shadow get shot with a gun. That's my like little mini wish.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, it's the middle of the show, so I'm not expecting like gigantic answers, but I'm ready for some fighting. I'm ready for some progression.
Great. Well, I got some predictions. You want to hear mine?
I super do.
Okay, so Warren Keffer he's got to be replaced as head of Zeta Squadron.
God rest his soul. God rest his soul.
And I think he's going to be replaced by a plucky young robot with a delightful little square mouth and a big light bulb head named Robot Jones. And this robot is just over and over going to say, "Whatever happened to Warren Keffer?"
Bleep 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 bleep.
Whatever happened to Robot Jones reference? You're welcome. Everybody. Here are real predictions. Delenn and Sheridan kiss. That's super real. Yep. They're going to do a deep kiss, and then one of them is going to say thank you to the other one right afterward. That's my prediction. They're going to like look at each other in the eye, and one of them is going to say thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, like dramatically. I think Vera is going to slap Londo, and then and then kind of be like a rogue Centauri dude. Do some crazy
I want
shit.
That. Yeah. I want that, yeah.
Jakar and Garibaldi are going to drink together and talk about loneliness and faith. And and I wrote, Jakar has studied, quote, your human baseball with some curiosity for quite some time. That's funny to me. Ivanova is going to be in charge now for some reason.
I'll take it.
Like fully in charge. And then Zach Allen is going to matter more to the detriment of the show. But it's pretty cool when he and Robot Jones discover their primal thirst for one another's flesh/metal.
Oh, it's hot.
Yep.
It's hot.
Natoth never comes back.
Aww.
We're not going to see her again. But we will see Kosh again out of his encounter suit. This time, instead of a space Jesus, he's going to look like one of those little smoking aliens from Men in Black.
The ones that drink coffee?
Yeah, yeah, those guys.
Ew. Do they have a name? They're just called worms on the Men in Black wiki.
Yep.
Or annelids. I always think of them drinking coffee because...
That's what Kosh looks like.
My connection... Oh, they're so gross. I just saw a full body. I always think of them because I watched the cartoon more than I saw the movie. So in the cartoon, that was their whole joke, was that they're always like, "Hey, how you doing, Ancient J?" And they had like dumb accents.
Yeah.
They're gross. Yeah, that's going to be Kosh. You're right.
Ew, yuck.
Yep. Yep.
Yuck.
Great.
These boys.
Nibbles.
Yucky.
Delicious.
Alan, you want to know what we're watching next week?
I do. I super schmooper do.
All right, next week we're doing it. We're starting season 3 of Babylon 5. We're going to be hitting that halfway point sooner than you might think. We'll start by watching 2 episodes, as we always do. Season 3, episode 1.
Episode 1.
Mm-hmm. Matters of Honor. Sheridan encounters a shadow vessel. Londo tries to end his alliance with the Shadows.
Whoa! Was I immediately right?
Yeah, immediately
right.
Then, Season 3, Episode 2, Convictions. A series of bombings on Babylon 5 triggers an extensive investigation involving some new residents. One of those new residents could be Robot Jones, so we shall see.
I've heard there's a new worse Warren Keffer.
No, what?
Yeah, the guy that's in like the art
worse,
or whatever.
A worse Warren Keffer?
Yeah, the new guy.
No way.
There's a new guy.
There's no such thing as a worse Warren Keffer.
Be nice. Hey, guys, it's me. You guys gotta be nice to me. I died for your sins. I'm Jesus.
I will never get over the scene where before we knew who he was eating dinner with the whole crew, the whole main cast. I will never get past that.
It's so annoying. I'm like
so
mad all over again.
Frustrating.
How dare you? You don't know any of them. Just ugh. Knowing also that he's like a network mandate is very, 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 very funny.
Yeah, super. That does make it funny.
Mm. But yeah, that'll do it for our discussion of Season 2 of Babylon 5. Let's take it to the plug zone.
Mm.
You can email us questions, comments, or concerns at chatspod@gmail.com. You can also tweet at us at chatspod, C-H-A-T-Z, POD on Twitter. If you have shorter form questions, you can also rate us on iTunes. Please get the word out there for the show that we work very hard on for your listening pleasure. And if you would like to support us financially, you can do so by heading over to patreon.com/chatspod. Your incentive for that is that you love us, and also we'll give you some bonus content if you do
that.
Yeah,
it's super fun stuff. If you pay $2 a month, then you get movie commentaries from us, commentary chats. So if you like that little taste of us watching.
Yeah, if you like us watching YouTube videos, imagine that for 2 hours.
The Mr. Morton Schoolhouse Rock video.
Yeah. That's your little teaser for commentary chats.
You let me do that, dude.
I might cut the whole thing out.
No. No, you can't.
I might have to cut the whole thing. It's fine. We'll find out.
No, you're not going to. Don't do that.
I won't cut the whole thing out. I'll just cut most of it out.
No,
don't worry about it.
It's what the people want.
Trust the editor on this.
And listen, and to sweeten the pot this month, the month of February, instead of just releasing one movie commentary, we're releasing three total. We've already released two of them, Groundhog Day and Hitch, the Will Smith classic rom-com. Also, Kevin James is in there.
Kevin James.
Pretty fun movie. Despite itself, you know?
Yeah, it's a pretty like earnest movie too. Yeah. I like that about it.
And then before the month is done, we're also going to be watching My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
It's a big fat movie from 2000s.
Yeah, and then next month, you know, who knows what we're going to watch? But something else.
Luck of the Irish, the Disney film.
No, sir. Vito, thank you.
Okay, bummer.
Viggo Mortensen.
Vito Morgan.
We can talk about it.
Okay, good.
And then $5 a month, you can get access to our bi-weekly behind-the-scenes program, Chats Nights. And that's sort of, you know, either we'll pick a topic to talk about, or you're just kind of peeking in on what our conversations look like outside of the episode. So before and after the mics are hot, so to speak.
The next one is very firmly after the mics. It is a very sleepy episode.
We recorded it last night at what, like past midnight, something like that?
Yeah, yes.
It's a fun one.
Mm-hmm. Patreon.com/chatspod. Magellan, what is your chatsum for this week?
Oh, fella. As everybody knows, the chatsum is a little something that we think you should snack on in between now and our next episode if you're looking for something to do. Mm-hmm. And you know, buddy, I don't know what my chatsum is.
Wow.
shoot. It's something, you know, you can snack on it. My chatsum for this week, it's going to be a little strange, but if you went to an undergraduate institution that has its graduates volunteer to interview students, you know, for college admissions, I think you should try it out. I've been doing that on behalf of my alma mater. It's actually pretty fun. So for the next college admissions cycle, consider volunteering to interview applicants. You should look into it and see if your college does that or not.
Yeah, do you just like go on a website and email someone?
I think you can probably whatever alumni website or portal your school has, I'm sure there's information there.
Yes, one of those kooky websites.
Yeah, that's my chat sim. Sort of a sideways one. What about you, dude? What's your chat sim this week?
My chat sim for this week is if you've listened to Alan, I probably like chat some music at some point, mm-hmm. and like concerts, take care of your ears. If you're going to concerts regularly, yeah. and you're like, I love going to the front, I want to dance and sing along to the big songs, please, please do yourself a favor. Buy some earplugs.
Oh, good.
Please buy some good earplugs. They're not expensive, and you will thank me later when your ears are ringing for the next 48 hours after the rock concert that you went to on Tuesday night, and your name is Alan. This is a chatsum for me from a week ago, because I went to a Metric concert. They're my favorite band, and I was right up front, and I was next to the speaker, and I was like, this rocks. I can barely hear anything. And then the next day, I was like, that ain't good. And then I got some headphones for like $10, and they come in a little carrying case, and they don't you don't see them, so you're not going to like look like a weirdo. And you can still, the big question is always like, oh, am I still going to be able to hear the music? You can get ones that you can still hear the music.
Hmm.
You just need to cover it enough to not damage your ears. Because the thing with hearing damage is it's permanent. It's not recoverable. Ooh. It's completely permanent, and it's completely preventable. So don't be too late to do that. Grab yourself some good earplugs.
Yep.
And that, dear listener, is going to do it. Thank you. This is going to do it for this episode of Chats Lawn 5. Peace.